Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report podcast. I'm your host, Vago Maradian. Our podcast is brought to you by Bell. Since 1935, Bell has been redefining flight. Learn more about its pioneering spirit at bellflight.com. Joining us today is Tim Dare, the Deputy Director for Prototyping and Software in the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering, a relatively new DoD role backed with $400 million in spending to address gaps between pressing combatant commander operational needs and existing military service programs, ideally resulting in better military capabilities. He joined DoD as the Deputy Director for Developmental Test Evaluation and Prototyping from a career in Lockheed Martin. And I should note, this is the first part of a two-part interview. The second part is going to be out soon. Tim, thanks very, very much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much, Vago. It's great to be here.
Absolute pleasure having you on, and especially on a day like today when everybody is focused on the political, and we wanted to focus on sort of delivering on operational needs. Before we get started, our global coverage is sponsored by Leonardo DRS. Northrop Grumman sponsors our weekly cyber report and our cyber coverage overall. Fincantieri Marinette Marine sponsors our naval coverage. General Atomics Aeronautical Systems sponsors our coverage of strategy, and Beretta USA sponsors our land warfare coverage. Bell, Beretta USA, and Leonardo DRS all sponsored our coverage of AUSA Now, the Association of the United States Army's annual meeting this year conducted virtually. Tim, you've kind of got an unprecedented job that's guided by the joint warfighting concept and also combatant commander needs. But walk us through this new role and how you're doing it and what you hope you're accomplishing in the process.
All right. Thanks, Vago. The joint warfighting concept coming out of the joint staff is our key driver. And ultimately, my job is to identify technologies that are listed in the modernization areas out of the National Defense Strategy, take those technologies at the after they've been proven in the lab, that would be like TRL 3-4, and then create operational prototypes that we put into the hands of the warfighter. So it's really an incubation period of where I take these capabilities and develop new overmatch capabilities to meet adversarial responses about 10 years down the road is what our focus is. So, and I do that in both the prototyping and the software area, where I will prototype new techniques for software and put that into my prototypes that I develop, and then ultimately pass those down to the services to inform programs of record that they're looking to implement down the road.
So talk to us about the integrated priority lists, right? Those are submitted by all the combatant commanders. You sift through them to determine which of those priorities are the ones that demand your focus. Talk to us about how you prioritize all those lists, because obviously there are some things that are common to all COCOMs, but some of them are very unique. And what are the top gaps and holes that you're trying to fill?
Yeah, this is an interesting problem. I came in 2 years ago, and I had a completely different perspective on what the joint staff did versus what I found out they actually did, where they were taking inputs from the combatant commanders, who, by the way, are our main stakeholders. We're a joint organization, not OSD, of course. And they were focused on looking and validating the requirements of the combatant commanders and then putting that through the JSIDS and JROC process. And we received inputs directly from the combatant commanders based on what their IPLs were, their integrated priority lists. And what I found out was there was nobody looking across the combatant commanders to identify the common issues that were in their IPLs that I had that would help inform me. I mean, I have a limited budget, and so I want to put that budget where the biggest capability is most impactful across the combatant commanders. So I created a forum called the Joint Mission Forum with the J7 and the J8, And what we did was bring in the combatant commander IPLs and services to identify what are the greatest priorities among the IPLs that have the greatest impact for me to go off and prototype. And so we run that forum twice a year in order to identify a priority one-to-end mission list that we then use to establish where our money is going to go to. Obviously, the highest priority gets the most money, and then it goes down the list. And the second part of your question, I think, was what are we focused on? Historically, we have been focused on hypersonics. That has been an area of the department that has been lacking as far as getting production-ready units, operational units out into the field in the warfighters' hands. Our adversaries are moving faster than we are in that area. So that's what last year was our main focus, and a lot of money went towards that from a prototyping perspective. We're now focused on EW, electronic warfare, and DE, directed energy, as our next set of capabilities, followed closely by fully networked command and control. And those are all common areas that are identified in the IPLs, hypersonics specifically from an Indo-PACOM perspective.
Talk to us about software and what you're doing. What are the top software needs that you're pushing out to the force?
So I'm the DoD responsible senior representative for moving forward with software S&T for software resilient systems. And so what we're finding is we have many large programs that are sponsored by the services, platform development environments like Platform One. JADC2 is another one coming out of the higher organizations. We are focused on identifying capabilities that we can prototype to support large programs of record. One of the prototyping activities that we're doing today is looking at a messaging bus interface with a focus on security and on performance and throughput for a very large program of record to ensure that they have insight to a solution that will solve their problem. What we find is that as we go out to industry, which I came from, industry has their ideas, but they may not be looking at the full intent or reuse of how a solution might be used by other services or other programs within those services. And that's what we focus on from a joint perspective. And the programs, especially the programs of record, are very happy to receive support from OSD in solving their hard problems, which we then utilize on other programs to really create a grounds-up common approach to solving problems, which ultimately results in having programs being able to talk to one another, again, supporting a joint perspective from the combatant commands if it can become ubiquitous across the enterprise.
I want to talk to you about the sort of semantic and syntax difference, right? I mean, because sometimes we're not all speaking the same language. But in terms of transitioning this capability, right? I mean, when you look at hypersonics, when you look at almost any field, we've let sort of a thousand flowers bloom approach, which has been one of the challenges transitioning some of this capability into production, right? The last year and a half or so has been focused on trying to get us from that many, many prototypes to the deliverable programs. Talk to us a little bit about your role in that ecosystem to transition these really clever ideas we may have into actual deliverables through the valley of programmatic death, if you will, to mm-hmm. shepherd them from prototype into an actual hardware delivery effort.
So as you stated when we opened up the podcast, I focus on joint capabilities, gaps, fissures that are not identified or filled by specific service needs. And one of the biggest issues are the many services focus on many different prototypes all in the same area. And so hypersonics is a perfect one. We have stuff going on, multiple programs going on in the Air Force, multiple programs going on in the Navy, and they're all going in different directions. Other ones are in in DARPA, in labs. And what we're trying to do is identify a capability that's foundational that can be used across services so that we don't have to create essentially the same capability multiple times from an industrial base perspective. Efficiency is huge when you look at cost, when you look at schedule. And so I'm trying to ensure that as we develop a prototype, we are able to provide a capability that is cross-service, and we're doing that more than just hypersonics. We're doing it on other technologies as well. So we focus on ensuring that services from a transition perspective are participating in our prototypes. We have a transition rate of about 80%, and people define transition separately from a valley of death perspective, that you either put it into a program of record, it informs the requirements of that, or you could have it defined as creating a new prototype, or you can have it defined as just utilizing that prototype because it's operationally acceptable, and maybe the program of record will come years down the road, but it is a success. And so with our 80% number, we actually say we have success out of all three of those scenarios, and 20% is really a failure where we did not get the opportunity or leap ahead capability that we had planned when we initiated the prototype itself. I feel that is an acceptable number because we want to provide leap ahead new capability for our warfighters, and we're not always going to get it right at the start. So 20% to me is a good risk value from an investment perspective. Our success on transition is based on getting the service that's going to take the prototype capability forward into their program of record or in their mission area. And we get them involved extremely early. And I typically won't authorize funds to be released for the prototype until I have an agreed transition period. And so the service signs up and we execute the prototype. If it's successful, then they take it on and own it in their POM cycle.
So as Americans, we tend to favor 100% solutions, right? I mean, this goes back to what Dr. Gates was saying. You know, we like the exquisite, even if it means spending 300% or more in terms of time, effort, and money to try to get there. There is this understanding that the time element is really very critical. I used to like when Dr. Carter used to say time is actually the biggest factor in this, right? I mean, when you do a 22-year program, it costs more. You have to technologically refresh. So speed is actually your ally in all of this. What's the key to doing this with speed, with security, agility, but also economy?
I like your analogy as far as 100% versus, what I look at is good enough. And I think when Dr. Griffin was in the helm of R&E, that was one of the things that he touted, that, 80% is better than zero, and it costs a lot cheaper than 100%. And I believe that our acquisition system is really archaic from a requirements perspective in ensuring contracting meets exactly what the contract states from a requirements perspective, such that costs are driven by getting that essentially the last 20% of the capability. From a prototyping perspective, we don't have to go through the formal acquisition process. We can actually do OTAs, the other transaction authorities, acquisition or contract type, and have the services go off and create a prototype in a much shorter period of time, 1 to 5 years, and with a much lower cost to prove a concept. And what we've found is that having that done faster and cheaper really focuses the team to provide a capability that will be proven at the 80% level that can then inform the much larger formal acquisition of a program of record. And sometimes it's proven sufficiently that they just keep it. I mean, we have a laser sitting on a littoral combat ship, for instance, that is actually a prototype that was not moved into a program of record, but eventually may be. It is good enough for operational. It meets their need. And so that is a perfect capability that the Navy could just say, let's build another one of those, as opposed to going through a formal acquisition process. So hopefully that answers the question you were asking there.
It does. Where are the bulk of the solutions coming from, right? I mean, as you mentioned, you're trying to juggle all arms of the sort of national, as it's come to be known, right? I mean, the national innovation, technological innovation base. You've got military labs that are working on these programs, right? I mean, the laser that went on that ship was started by Art Sabrowski over the Navy's objections. I remember when he was leading the Office of Force Transformation. You know, talk to us a little bit about how you're balancing and drawing off of industry, off of DOD labs, government labs more broadly, and then academia, which is so critical, right? I mean, Dr. Lewis last week announced that partnership with the University of Texas on hypersonics to be in the lead of that academic consortium. Talk to us about how you're drawing from the entire innovation ecosystem to get solutions as quickly as you can.
Sure. Well, we put out a call for proposals once a year, which was a huge process change from what had been happening from a legacy perspective, where we had multiple calls in a year. And those calls really go to combatant commanders, services, labs, or other prototyping organizations to identify potential prototyping proposals in the area of interest. So we may have a focus area 1 year on hypersonics, another on EW, or something on any of the modernization areas that have been listed in the NDS. The services then put together a team of industry or labs, or potentially the lab could lead the team, which they would bring in industry or academia, UARCs, which are the university research centers, and they propose a new idea in the areas of interest that then get evaluated against technical reasonableness, achievability from a cost perspective and time perspective, and ultimate capability, is this going to be something that's helpful for the warfighter? That's our standard process. One of the things I wanted to do last year was to get, or actually it was this year, I apologize, was to get industry more involved, as opposed to us putting out a set of requirements stating, you know, we want a capability that has requirements of XYZ. There is a lot of IRAD going on in industry, big, medium, small. And I wanted to say, I have this global need statement, we called it, which was essentially a BAA type of announcement worldwide, really. And it listed areas of interest the modernization areas as well as mission areas that we were really focused on. We gave no requirement other than the fact that it had to be related to the near peer conflict that we're getting prepared for, had to be a technology at the technical readiness level of 3 or 4, meaning lab, that has been proven in the lab, and that it could be operationalized into a capability by 2030, that a warfighter could actually use it. And that was all of the requirements that I gave. So I added mission areas like operationalizing the stratosphere or integrated command and control, sensors for time-sensitive targeting, things like that. And I got over 1,300 responses because I let the entrance criteria be so low. It was a 100-word paragraph. And what I was hoping for is if I got one golden nugget out of that, that would be worth it. It's a lot of work on our side as to what makes sense versus inputs that sound industry, but we didn't really believe were achievable. So from an industry perspective, I really opened the door to allow them to tell us what are your best and brightest ideas that you're working on. We called that 1,300 responses down to 37 presentations and are now evaluating those presentation results to move forward on about 8 of them, which are extremely powerful nuggets that we would never have seen from a requirements perspective. So I've talked about services and labs. I've talked about industry. Academia is the last one. You mentioned the JHTO, Texas A&M. That's really focused on S&T, where they would then feed me technologies that I could operationalize through our prototyping efforts. I started another effort with the service academies last year, and I actually have a very exciting program going on with the Air Force Academy to produce a capability that I'm not going to go into, but it is each of the service academies have capstone exercises. And so they utilize the juniors and the seniors from those academies to build these capabilities that then just sit on the shelf. And I decided I want to go back and capitalize that because some of those capabilities could actually be operationalized for the warfighter. And the government already owns the IP for it. So why not do that? And so I actually asked them and hired the Air Force Academy to build me a capability prototype, proof of concept that I'm going to be testing out in December in just a few weeks, which they started essentially in February. And so I'm getting a concept starting in February of this year with a demonstration less than a year later, where an industry going through the entire acquisition process would be, you know, at least 2 years or 3 years to go through the formal activities. So hopefully that gives you insight as to the type of things I'm doing.
It does. How much of this is developing new stuff and how much of this is actually better integrating stuff that we have, right? I mean, that's the big question about the sort of the nature of innovation and foot speed, that some of this is about new stuff, but some of this is also better using stuff or differently using stuff we have. What are you finding in terms of that mix and balance?
So my organization is really focused on incubation of technologies into operational capability. So we really focus on new stuff. Every once in a while, we will look at integrating a existing set of technologies that will create a new capability. But there are other prototyping organizations like the Strategic Capabilities Office and the Defense Innovation Unit that will look at existing commercial and existing DoD programs to see how can you utilize those programs in a different way or those capabilities in a new and different way. And then the services also have the same type of thing through their rapid capability offices and labs. So I really focus on creating new capabilities that can be used in a joint environment.
Tim, thanks so very much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed it very much.
And now a word from our sponsor, retired United States Army Major General Jeff Schlosser, who is the Executive Vice President for Strategic Pursuits at Bell.
We've been building creative and innovative aircraft, next generation types of capabilities for almost 9 decades. Bell is the company that can deliver that.
Thanks very much, sir. And thanks to all of you for listening. Please follow our daily podcasts and visit the Defense and Aerospace Report website to subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook at Defense and Aerospace Report, and check us out on LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. Thanks again to Bell for their generous sponsorship, and we'll see you again tomorrow.